When people discuss literature related to the Upper Peninsula, authors frequently named include Ernest Hemingway, Jim Harrison, and John Volcker. But to leave it there is to miss a diverse group that includes some of the best writers of our time. Women authors tend to dominate bestseller lists in Michigan these days, and a host of them are creating a new voice and perhaps a new standard for writing about the UP. We'll talk to four of them next on Media Meet. Hello, and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are poets and authors Allison Swan, Lisa Faye Cootley, Andrea Scarpino, and Sharmi Karanen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's begin with some introductions around the table. Please tell us where you're from, where you live now, what drew you to writing, and how at least some of your work relates to the Upper Peninsula. Want to begin, Allison?
Sure. At this point, it's easiest just to say I'm from Michigan,
okay.
But I did grow up in Metro Detroit. My mom's from Marquette, and my dad's from Detroit. Now I live in Ann Arbor and spend a lot of time in other parts of the southern Lower Peninsula. I was drawn to writing by a love of reading and a kind of growing obsession with words from the time I was little. I was one of the kids who used to sit at the breakfast table and read the cereal box. I think there's also that using language as a way to explore that always fascinated me too. When I didn't understand something, my first impulse as a child was to write about it.
Okay.
Sounds
like a good habit to get into.
It's worked for me so far. And then the Upper Peninsula, It's really hard for me to imagine what person I would be now without having spent as much time as I did running around in the woods and on the shores of Lake Superior and Lake Michigan, too. I was the little girl who took her Barbies out in the woods and set up on a moss-covered stump. And that's a true story.
Andrea.
So I live in Marquette. I've been here for 5 years almost. And I think I also really turned to language as a way to kind of explore, make sense of the world, make sense of things that were happening in my life. So that's always been an impulse for me. And I think I also have really developed a love of nature living here. When I lived in Los Angeles, all of my writing had to do with fire and desert and burning and things like that. And once I've lived here, it's shifted to more ice and cold and Lake Superior and the woods and red pines and things like that. So it's definitely had an effect on my writing.
Okay. Sharmi?
Yeah, I'm not a Uper. I am a lifelong Indiana resident, but I married a Uper and was introduced to the UP when I was 19 and was just smitten, yeah, really, by that. The Keweenaw is where my husband's family is from, and it's a beautiful landscape. And as far as what drew me to writing, I come from a family of a bunch of storytellers, and they're great raconteurs. They just enjoy weaving a tale. And to get any airtime in my family is kind of hard. So if you write your words down, you have a place at the table too. So that's why I like writing. I have that love of telling the story inside me. But boy, there's a lot of talkers in my family.
Lisa Faye.
I think I have some combination of all of those things. Though I wasn't the child reading obsessively. I grew up in Wisconsin, playing along Lake Michigan, not Lake Superior, and just found myself in my early 20s, a single mother, staying up at night writing, trying to figure out my life and my experiences.
Okay.
Enrolled in college and ended up here for grad school. So I fell in love with Lake Superior and wanted never to leave, and it's influenced my writing in a real way because I left the UP and went to Utah to study. And so I have the binary ice-fire situation happening in the first book, too. Okay. For those reasons.
The inspiration for this program is an anthology edited by award-winning author Ron Rickey and recently published by Michigan State University Press called Here, Women Writing on Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And each of you is a contributor in some way to that book. Allison, you wrote the foreword. What was Ron after, and what did you find in the collection as you reached to describe it? I think, by the way, it's just it's a wonderful kind of setting of the, setting the tone for that book.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can answer the question what Ron was after, mm-hmm. But I was so grateful to be asked to write the foreword to this book because the place is extremely important to me, and the writing of women is extremely important to me, and literary writing is extremely important to me, and so I was able to kind of indulge my my sense that those are some of the most important things. and so I hoped to write, well, what I found in the book was a lot of variety, which is what I expected.
Okay.
And I tend to resist generalizations when talking about place-based writing, believe it or not.
Good.
And I think Ron did a really fine job of putting together a collection that is extremely varied. It's a wonderful journey, really. The book's a journey, and it was the same kind of thing I was trying to do. My experience of Here, mm-hmm. of the reading of Here, was the same thing I was trying to create for readers with Freshwater.
Okay, good. Let's. Why don't we take a moment right here to hear you reading a poem? This is entitled "Leaves" from "Before the Snow Moon."
This is a poem that I'm quite sure I couldn't have written if I hadn't been allowed to run wild as a child in the woods outside Big Bay, Michigan. Leaves. She's been becoming this way forever. Once upon a time, from the crook of a young ash tree, she can still climb in her imagination, although it didn't grow old. It was quiet there and green, roofless and saturated with everything she knew she needed. Under the rough bark, under her young limbs, phloem and xylem moved gallons of the precisely right solution to keep growing root and twig and leaf and tree. The world called realistic careened along below. She could watch it all, and sometimes she did, the chaotic slurry of cars and cleaning and tearing to pieces. Most times she stayed in the green world, climbed down, but stayed. Every evergreen scale of the spreading juniper, where she slid from civilization to enchanted forest, carrying on plant making. This, and nothing less than this, was all around her skin when she was girl and green and traveling between the present and the hungry future.
That was Allison Swan reading Leaves from her collection Before the Snow Moon. The Here anthology might raise a question that you might respond to here. Do women respond to, say, wilderness in a way that's different from men? The question is, really, are these poem stories and essays that only women could have written? What do you think? Go ahead.
I'll weigh in.
All right.
It's kind of a complicated question. I don't think we know until we have enough women's literature out there to know.
Okay.
I think that what this does is, by getting women's literature out there, it gives more women permission to write. When you see other women writing, you feel like you can do that too. And so each woman has a unique voice. I can't say that we're one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this opportunity to get more voices into, whether they're women or men, but just bring some more ideas into the conversation is what's really important.
I think, in a way, I think Ron is saying that, and I think this is the reason that each of you were chosen for this project, that you might be actually inventing a school here, a new kind of way of writing about the Upper Peninsula, or at least something that's comprehensive. What do you think? Do you feel yourself as part of something that's being built here, or something being crafted?
I don't know. That's another big question. But I think something I really like about the anthology is that there are so many different perspectives. There's not the traditional just kind of nature writing. Mm-hmm. There's also pieces that I think are really critical of living in the Upper Peninsula, and they really hone in on the isolation that we can feel here, especially in the winter, right? When there's, 200 inches of snow or whatever. So I think that there is really a diversity of voices here, and that's something that's important to keep in mind too, that we're not all just writing nature poems, or we're not all just writing poems about snow, right? Or whatever the stereotype, I guess, would be if you think about the nature or Upper Peninsula. But there are a lot of different voices who are all kind of inhabiting this space.
Okay. The audience grows wider for each of you here in this anthology. Andrea, it also helps focus your audience a little bit because you've been named the most recent Upper Peninsula Poet Laureate.
Yes, I have been.
Important recognition for one's peers and stakeholders, and I think it's something whose time has come here in the UP. Tell us about that, your idea for a free little poetry library, is that right? And what you hope to achieve as the new laureate.
Yeah, well, it is quite an honor to have that designation, especially since I haven't lived here that long. I'm not a native Youper. I don't claim to be, right? I've only lived here 5 years. So I am very grateful for that recognition. I think that, again, there's just so many voices. I mean, when I moved up here, I really discovered this active writing community I didn't expect to see at all. And so I think that's been a delight, and that's something that I want to showcase in my time as Poet Laureate. Michigan actually doesn't have a Poet Laureate position as a whole. The House just put forward a bill that hopefully will get us a Michigan Poet Laureate. But since we don't have one, at least we have the Upper Peninsula Poet Laureate. And I think part of my sadness about some poetry in the U.S. is that we're taught that it's something that's done kind of somewhere else in the ivory tower. It's hard. It's complicated. Only special people can understand it.
Only special people in special places.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think something I really would like to do is help just get poetry, break down some of those barriers, right? So the Free Little Poetry Library is just a little poetry library that is right now outside of the DeVos Art Museum, and hopefully we'll be traveling across the UP. And the idea is you don't need a library card. You don't need to have anything special. You just walk along the street and you see it and you take a book and, you know, maybe you like it, maybe you don't, but you can bring back books and add to the collection and just kind of have poetry be part of everyday experience instead of only something that exists in the classroom or in a special place.
Okay, good. Let's have a sample of your work here. This is a poem called Persephone. And it's from the anthology we've been talking about here.
This is a poem called Persephone. So it's you all along to whom I should have prayed, ruler of ghosts, curses. I dreamed of my father night after night, wished when I opened my eyes he would be sitting on my bed, waking me to eat. Each turn down a grocery aisle, I looked for his cart filled with fruit, coffee. Driving his car, I held my hand across the passenger seat, waited to feel his fingertips. Nothing. Persephone, I know you didn't choose Hades. Know you make the best of it, loving the beautiful dead, touring the underworld with kings, using the harvest moonlight to carry out your whims. I know you don't give up your dead. But what about the weakest version of all they used to be? Slightest glint of their eyes, maybe? Scent of their hair on a pillow, sheet? If I offer you gifts of colored glass, fresh evergreen, silk robes, berries, if I offer to take your place 2 months of every year, if I sing at your knees, Iron Queen, I will pay any price. Just send me my father's ghost.
Andrea Scarpino reading Persephone from here. We have to take a moment here to remind our television viewers and especially our radio audience that we're talking about Upper Peninsula poetry, or poetry about the Upper Peninsula, with Allison Swan, Lisa Faye Kootley, Andrea Scarpino, and Sharmi Karanen. The premier volume of this, of course, is all women authors. There are going to be three volumes, as I understand it. They'll be mixed in terms of gender and stuff. And the third volume is going to be include a little description of maybe the history of writing in the Upper Peninsula, which should be really interesting. But in this first volume, it points to a kind of a common observation. You mentioned this a little bit, that women excel in writing on nature themes. I don't know how you feel about that, but then, you know, so do many poets generally, when you think about it. Where's that sentiment in your work? It's not the only theme I read in what you're doing, certainly. Anybody want to take that?
Well, and maybe just to address some of the other things we talked about, too. I mean, I think, just as a whole, I mean, because when I'm approaching nature, I think I'm approaching it in a way that's not necessarily expected. So one of the poems I have in here is called My Lake, and it's certainly not a nature poem in a real way. I mean, it's a personification of a lake that's very fierce. But one of the things that I'm always interested in...
No slow dancing.
Exactly. There is no... No, she can swing, she can cha-cha, she can salsa and tap, but she refuses it.
Recall the poem. Go ahead.
Yeah. But... I think what I'm always looking for, even inside, even within a fierce body of water or land, is the fragility. Because, I mean, we're talking about, you know, women versus male writers, maybe, or, you know, I feel like we're, you know, the in the UP we have a kind of a disparity. We have, you know, people working really hard, long days, and then we have these poets. There's, as if that actually exists, when those binaries don't exist.
Okay.
So I think one of the things that here does, and one of the things that we can try to do, or I try to do, writing about nature, even is to try to draw on that spectrum and to see that there's so much more gray area than there are actual points of opposition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Could I add something?
Yeah.
I just heard a comment made in an interview with a writer about the UP. A while back, and I'm still thinking about it months and months later, and it was that Marquette is a city surrounded by pristine wilderness, and nobody could spend any time walking around in the land outside Marquette and describe it as pristine. And so I know that one of the things I do as a writer, engaging with the wild world, wild creatures, wild land, is try to bear witness to what this, you're skating on thin ice when you say things like this, but bear witness to what is really there. Rather than, and I'm speaking again as myself as a writer, rather than, and actually actively avoiding contributing to the kind of legend making. I don't know if that has anything to do with myself as a woman, but it's definitely what I'm about, up to.
So not falling on what's comfortable, not falling back on what's comfortable, but actually describing what's there. Like that?
Okay. Or familiar might be another way to say it.
Let's, you know, there's a poem here that's, I think it's like taking a walk and looking at what's there. It's written by Sharmi Karanen, and it's called Sini, from the book, or from the anthology Here.
Sini. It's slow going, waiting for the rock to become a fish, the log to become a grebe. The eagle's nest hovers naked and known, but who in their right mind would leave the SUV to fight the deer flies? 100,000 ticks per moose. We used a retractable razor blade to scrape the inspection stickers from each window carefully. Safe for another year? Yes, there was a forest fire, a virgin pine burn, then blue buckets of berries all those following years. The town was skirted like a woman you're dying to surround. Hemingway said, "Big two-hearted was more poetic."
Nice reference to Hemingway there. Especially since the big two-hearted, as it's described, is not really where the big two-hearted is. But
it is not.
That's very interesting. The whatever approach to it, these poems are often rooted in a sense of place, which is not a simple matter. Poets often are identified with it. When you begin a draft that includes the UP, do you feel at home when you're writing it? I mean, are you feel comfortable just looking around, taking it from there?
I would say, the Indiana girl, that the UP is always the other to me. It is the other that I'm smitten with.
Okay.
And so I don't feel at home. I feel like I'm describing this thing that I've just fallen in love with. Mm-hmm. So it's I can't quite understand. I'm always grasping to understand what's going on, and it's always a little bit beyond my reach.
Sure.
I think that for me, the benefit of coming from Indiana is I can look at the UP with those other eyes.
Sure.
You know, the people
fresh eyes.
With fresh eyes. Yeah, the mm-hmm. people that live here. Kind of like I feel about Indiana, it's my home, and I don't notice things around me as much as I should.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think about when I write about the UP.
Okay. Lisa, if I can presume a little bit here, tends to look at nature and interweave her, you know, your own development or development of people around you kind of within that story. Let's hear a poem called On Home from her collection Errata.
This is a poem from my forthcoming collection, Errata, which is not in here. The collection Ron Reike has edited and published recently. But as a single mother, this is always a timely poem for me. On Home. All winter long, my sons have pointed guns in my face and with their mouths popped the triggers. The oldest wants to spoon me. The youngest wants to change his name to the playground pimp. When we circle up for dinner, I'm careful not to say chicken breast or meatball or anything they can follow with, "That's what she said." Consider the going rate for hormones, then picture an eager group of eBay bidders. I joke, but someone should tell these boys, in a wake of black mascara, mothers drive away. All winter long, I've left feel-good post-its on the bathroom mirror, the espresso maker, the edge of my razor. Every day, I've given myself reasons to stay.
Pretty personal. You think it's risky?
I think it's one of the sweetest poems I've ever written with regards to mothering. No. That poem started out as a tribute to the lake, and somehow the lake got lost in it. It was just a catalyst for the poem. So,
that's very interesting. Great Lakes, and especially Lake Superior, seem to get hold of anyone, mm-hmm. you know, trying to pull together impressions, thoughts, and stories about this region. The other markers come to mind, too. The woods, inland oceans, the weather, blood, survival. Perhaps any tourist could list them, but your responsibility is to make something out of them, mm-hmm. which is different. These are really primeval and large sorts of themes. What makes the piece that includes them something truly of the Upper Peninsula? Is it just the reference itself, or how do you make it a UP poem? Go ahead.
I think it has to be tenacious.
Okay.
For me, as a writer, I think. And when I was saying opposition, I think one of the things I was trying to say was that there's a connection mm-hmm. between mm-hmm. Upers and their place.
Yeah.
And while I'm not technically a Uper, mm-hmm. this is my home. And I'm never more at home than I am when I'm next to Lake Superior. And so I think if you sit with her long enough, she becomes a part of what you're doing, lyrically, sonically, mm-hmm. and in terms of content and fierceness. And so that's why I think it's important to note that this is a hard place to live,
yeah.
but it's the best place to love. So,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You just articulated something that I believe absolutely. I agree completely. And I've actually had a lot of people from other parts of the country. I've lived in the Southeast, the Pacific Northwest, and on the East Coast, and I've had people often say, people from Michigan seem to have such a strong sense of place. And I don't think it's an accident. I think it has a lot to do with the bodies of water that we don't know enough about yet to understand that they are actually having an impact on us physically, I believe. And I think that's kind of exciting, and it sounds a little, as Gary Snyder would say, a little woo-woo, but they are awfully large, you know? they're very large.
I can feel my blood pressure drop as soon as I see Lake Superior. I can just feel it drop. Yeah.
But even in that, I think the fierceness that you talk about is really important, because I think, you know, I've been sailing since I was 4 years old, and I'm terrified of Lake Superior. I mean, it's a terrifying lake. You hear all of these stories, oh, she went down for water and disappeared, you know? I mean, it really, there is this fierceness and this quality of danger, I think, that's associated with it, too. So, yes, it's beautiful and lovely, and I love sitting by Lake Superior, absolutely. But there's something else that makes it so intriguing, I think. And I think that's the fear and the sense that it's more powerful than you.
Well, being so drawn to it, do you consider part of your vocation the fate of the lakes?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I have always felt very attached to water, and obviously we have some water crises happening all across the globe, so I think it's something we need to take seriously.
Allison's given us some thought, I think. The fate of the lakes.
Yeah, it's kind of sort of like, how long do you have?
We only have about a minute. So.
We have a tremendous response. I'll just put it right out there. I think those of us who inhabit the Great Lakes region have a tremendous responsibility to be good stewards of the lakes and to appreciate what they are and how rare they are. And I think everybody sitting at this table, I know everybody sitting at this table is very much engaged with the large bodies of fresh water and their value and their significance and their complexity, their fierceness, their beauty, their everything else. And so I don't think there's really any danger of the people who pay attention to the lakes not doing what they need us to do.
Okay. And hopefully what you're doing is helping to endear the lakes to more people. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about Upper Peninsula literature, specifically poetry, with poets and authors Allison Swan, Lisa Faye Cootley, Andrea Scarpino, and Charmy Karenin. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.